I got a little excited. I'm sorry. So I feel like I know you all well enough to give this sermon today. When you are becoming a minister, there are many hoops you have to jump through. One of them is that you have to have a career assessment. And we're not talking like you just have to talk to a shrink for an hour. It's like you have to fill out a form where they ask you 583 questions like, do you like to tease small animals? And then they tell you whether or not you're well suited to be a minister. So, and one of the doctors went by his first name, and that was cool. And the other one was Dr. Fraser. And I had to talk to them for 4 hours each over a 2-day period. And then I took all these battery of tests. And so we found out some things that are not that surprising, like I'm a 4 in the Enneagram, which means I'm an artist. Okay. Yeah. And that I am suited to be a minister, which was I was very relieved, and that I'm not insane, which is nice. But one of the things they said at the end, they write up a thing and they send it to the UUMA, like they send it to my bosses. And it said, she needs to develop a spiritual practice. Well, I got mad because art is my spiritual practice. It's been my spiritual practice since I was in elementary school. I write songs. That's what I do. It's cheaper than therapy. It's a really good thing. I do it every day. I'm very diligent about it. And I started thinking, well, that's a sermon. So here you go. So you're about to get it. So I call this sermon Art as Prayer, but it could be Creativity as Prayer. So making art, whether it's writing or drawing or painting or dancing or composing or playing music, can be a spiritual practice. So spirituality, what is that? In simple terms, spirituality is a worldview and a way of life based on the belief that there's more to life than what meets the senses. More to the universe than just purposeless mechanics. More to consciousness than electrical impulses in the brain. And more to our existence than the body and its needs. Spirituality usually involves a belief in a higher form of intelligence or consciousness running the universe, but it doesn't have to. As well as life after death. You can believe in that or not. Something happens. It exists to satisfy the deeper human thirst for meaning. Everybody wants that, whether you're agnostic or atheist or Christian. Everybody wants meaning and peace and mystery and truth. So religion is not necessary to be spiritual. Spiritual practices exist in all religions and in most philosophies. So here's the most scientific definition I could find for spiritual practice. It says, the Spiritual Science Research Foundation defines spiritual practice as honest and sincere efforts done consistently on a daily basis to develop divine qualities and achieve everlasting happiness or bliss. Sounds good. Another way of defining spiritual practice is our own personal journey of going inward. And art certainly fits this description, in my view. How many people do something artistic? How many people wish they did something artistic? Okay. Many people practice the more conventional forms of spiritual practice, from prayer and meditation to martial arts, but arts can be a very successful way to go inward. I'm a songwriter, and I've been playing and singing some of my own music today, as you heard, because I wanted to take the risk to write you something. How many people have ever tried contour drawing? So for those of y'all who don't know, contour drawing would be like you take a piece of paper and a pen. Don't look at the paper or the pen, but look at what you're drawing, and you try to follow with your eyes and your hand at the same time. And you don't look at the paper. And what happens is the first time you do it, it's going to be kind of Picasso-like. And you'll be like, ooh, that's not very good. But what's cool is if you keep doing it, you start seeing and drawing what you actually see. Like when we were all kids, you learned how to draw a Christmas tree, right? It was like this. And a Christmas present looked like this. Right? Am I right?
Yes.
That's not what they actually look like. Right? So what if you actually started looking at what you are actually seeing? That's what I'm talking about today. I do it with writing and with music, but you could do it with a number of things. You could just do it with, I'm going to tell the truth today. That would be frightening. You know, not necessarily always a good thing. My wife says, telling the truth will set you free, but the naked truth will get you killed. Yeah. So some people do writing as a journaling. There's a woman named Julia Cameron. Maybe you've read her book called The Artist's Way. And she gets people to write 3 pages a day and just write whatever. Like, I mean, when you first start, sometimes it says like this, I have no idea what to say. I can't believe I am agreeing to do 3 pages. 3 pages seems like forever. I mean, I just had breakfast and I had that boring, okay? But what's cool is if you keep doing it, it's kind of like if you were destined to be a 4-minute miler, but you never jogged. You're never going to run a 4-minute mile, right? So if you practice writing and getting your brain connected to your hand in whatever way, what happens is then your inner self starts trusting you and you start writing better. I feel like the universe of creativity actually supports you in your being a willing conduit to creativity. That's the Wookiee spiritual thing. But I don't feel like I actually write the song. Sometimes I feel like I'm just a willing vessel for it. I'm in shape. I practice. And then sometimes, boom, it comes out. Occasionally. Maybe not that often. You know. And occasionally what you write matters to people. And occasionally other things will happen, like the business of art. But the business of art is not what I'm talking about today. In fact, the best quote about that is Van Morrison said, music is spiritual. The music business is not. So I believe that if you have a desire and intention to be an artist, you are an artist. You have a right to be an artist. You have a right to play music. You have a right to draw. You have a right to speak. You have a right. It's a human right. It has nothing to do with whether anybody wants to hear you or not. Really, it doesn't. And I know so many people, like in my orchestra, a lot of people haven't played for 30 years. They were in the high school band, and they love being in the band, and they haven't been in a band. And then they'll come and join the orchestra, and the rules in the orchestra are there's no auditions. I figure out what level you are at, and I write your music for you at your level. So I have a ukulele player who's been in the orchestra for 3 years. They can play 2 chords, but they can't play them back to back. So I just write them a chord every 4 measures. So what's wrong with that? Nothing's wrong with that. They get to be in the band, they get to participate, and they're getting better. So now I can write 2 measures apart, you know, and next year they might be able to play more chords. You know, it's like, let yourself go at the speed in which you go. If you have a desire, it's part of who you are, and you want to actualize that. You want to be the most you can possibly be, because you are the only you in the universe. Even if you've got a twin, they're not exactly like you, right? So our job on the planet is just to be ourselves. And our job for each other is to support each other in that. Now that's the tricky part. Because we're in a culture that builds this concept of scarcity. Like, I can be a good songwriter, but there are better songwriters than me, so I should quit writing songs. No. I should keep writing songs. It makes me happy. It makes my life useful. Some people appreciate them. You know, it's not about that. How do I get this way? Well, I've had a backwards life. So some of y'all know this, but I got out of college, and I had been writing songs since I was 10. And so I made a cassette of 10 of my songs. And some people passed it around. And I sent it to a bunch of record companies because that's what people did in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And I got a couple of nice letters back that said, oh, it's too folky. We don't want you. And 2 years later, I was playing at South by Southwest, and 17 labels tried to sign me, and I got signed to a major record contract. And so suddenly I went from playing in little black-walled clubs that smelled like beer to playing in arenas. And I hadn't actually done anything to do that. And it just happened. It was sort of a miracle. But I did make the cassette. And then, and so I made a record, and we sold 100,000 albums, and I was on MTV, and I had to learn to talk. Because I was the kind of kid, I was this big in elementary school, but I wrote songs. So if I got mad at you, I wouldn't beat you up. I would just write a song about you. But I didn't really talk, so I'm still learning how to talk. Being a minister is helping me learn to talk. And songwriting was my way of communicating. So, great, 1 in a million people get a record deal. I got one. 1 in a million people. What they don't tell you is only 1% of those people are still musicians after 5 years. Breaks their hearts. A guitar player in my band got a deal after me. His record never came out. He's killed himself. He's gone. That is not an unusual story. But you're not going to hear the story very often, because most people don't want to talk about it. It's embarrassing. 1 minute you're the top of the world, and the next minute you're a failure. So y'all, I had to go bankrupt. They took all my songs. I was 26 years old. It was devastating. 1 minute they're playing my song on the radio and saying, now the pride of the bluegrass, Stealing Horses. And the next minute, oh, you used to be famous. It was hard. It was really hard. And they came and repossessed my truck. So I'm 26. I've had a record deal. I don't have a record deal. They're taking my car. I'm living in Oklahoma and playing every night, trying to make enough money for the people in the band. And they told me that the reason that they dropped me was because I was too fat.
Oh, no.
So not only do I have to deal with the fact that I got dropped, but I have to deal with the fact that 7 people lost their jobs because of me. So it's pretty devastating, and you either get philosophical or you kill yourself. Now, what saved my life was that I had a practice of writing. I had a craft of writing. I just got up and I went, okay, I lost 300 songs in the bankruptcy. I can write more songs. And now I have 21 CDs. So, it doesn't matter. It's a matter matters that I kept going. It mattered that writing was enough, whether people listen to it or not. And the fact of the matter is sometimes things are great and everybody's listening to your songs and they get you, and then the next minute they don't. You know, 9/11 happens and suddenly live music goes under and I can't make a living. So all these things happen, but the thing that saved my life is what I'm preaching to you today, which is craft matters. If you have a desire to do something and you give it the devotion of your attention, even if you've got 4 kids and you can only write one day in the morning for an hour a week, if you do that, in a year, you'll have a couple short stories to send out. If that matters to you, if getting published matters to you. Many, many famous people that we know of now, when they were alive, nobody listened to their work. Bach. Bach lost a job to Telemann. Can you imagine? I'm sorry, Bach is better. He is a lot better. And the only reason people know his music is because his son, one of his sons, was a famous piano teacher. And so a lot of people, actually Mendelssohn's grandmother, took piano lessons from the son of Bach. And so they played some of Bach's pieces that he had written for his students back in Germany. That's how it happens. Everybody says, okay, well, you're talented or you're not talented. Bull. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, that's a 19th century construct. It's not based on fact, okay? So everybody says, well, Mozart. Okay, let's talk about Mozart. So Mozart's dad, they still use his book to teach people to play the violin this way. Do you know that? He wrote it in the 1700s. His dad was one of the best teachers of music alive. And he started on Mozart when he was 4. Now, nobody, if you've played any Mozart, nobody's played any Mozart that he wrote before he was 21. 4 to 21, that's a long time to be working on your composition skills. So he didn't come out of the womb a great composer. He worked at it, and he had a great teacher. A lot of people that we say are talented were rich, and they had private lessons, and they got to start when they were really young, and so they had their 10,000 hours. If we change our mindset about that and get a little bit more realistic, that if you invest the time, you will get better, and you will get a chance to feel good about it. Like, what if you're like that woman Florence who sang, you know, she sang at Carnegie Hall and stuff. She couldn't sing to save her life, but she sang, and it made her happy most of her life. You know, art will make you happy. It's a gift from God. Martin Luther said music was a gift from God. And he was a composer, and he played the lute. And he made all the great hymns that we are singing, all these great hymns, the tunes are marching songs and drinking songs. And that's why everybody knew the tunes, so they could sing lustily in church. That's the facts. So, other people that you might want to read if you're interested in this kind of stuff, people I think that are really helpful. There's a book called Art and Fear by David Bales. He says, art is a high calling. Fears are coincidental. Coincidental, sneaky, disruptive, we might add, disguising themselves variously as laziness, resistance to deadlines, irritation with materials or surroundings, distractions over the achievements of others. Indeed, as anything that keeps you from giving your work your best shot. What separates artists from ex-artists is those who challenge their fears continue and those who don't quit. That's David Bales in a book called Art and Fear. You can find it anywhere. Julia Cameron is a really good supporter if you're feeling shaky about this stuff. And she said, but do you know how old I will be by the time I learn to really play the piano, act, paint, write a decent play? Yes, the same age you will be if you don't. Yes, I also love this book called The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. I think he's really great. And maybe the best person you could read about from a spiritual standpoint or spiritual practice standpoint might be anything by Natalie Goldberg. She wrote a book called Writing Down the Bones. And she was studying with a Roshi named Suzuki in Minneapolis, and she was learning Zen meditation. But she wrote every day. She went to a coffee shop, and she wrote every day. And he realized that that was her spiritual practice, and he encouraged her, and now she's one of the most famous writing teachers in the world, and her book sold like a million copies or whatever. But she's a great writer, and she talks about it very realistically, her struggles with it. And so I encourage you to read her books. And also you can learn a lot about Buddhism reading her books. But anyway, I hope you got something out of this talk. And I'm going to leave you with a quote from Natalie Goldberg. She says, trust in what you love. Continue to do it. And it will take you where you need to go. Thank you.